Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to the Kosafa Show with Mark Gleason and Nick Say.
In this edition of the Kosafa Show, we chat to former Botswana international Dipsy Salawani about football development ahead of the CAF African Schools Football Championship Kosafa qualifier that starts in Stellenbosch on Friday. We also get fascinating insights from renowned football performance analyst Muzi Matlaba, who has worked at some of the biggest clubs on the continent and is amongst the very finest in his field. He breaks down the work of an analyst and what goes into preparing teams for a match in an interview that is not to be missed. But first, Salawani gives us his insights into school football on the continent and the academy he is running in Gaborone that could turn out to be a game changer for aspiring players in Botswana. Dipsy, thanks very much for taking the time to chat to us. The CAF African Schools Football Championship Kosafa qualifier is in Stellenbosch starting on Friday. You are there as one of the Legends ambassadors. Just your thoughts on the whole schools football concept that has been put in place by CAF President Dr. Patrice Motsepe.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. It's really good, man, to see kids coming together to showcase their talent. It's very important. You know, sometimes as a kid, when you're just playing in the streets or in the corridors at school, you feel like the world doesn't see. But when this concept came through, I thought of it as a nice way to bring more young players interested into the game. So I must applaud the idea.
And can you kind of remember back in your day, you know, what was your development journey, if we talk about at the under 15 level, which of course what this tournament is? As you quite rightly said, it gives kids now an opportunity to be seen and have, international exposure.
Yeah, well, I was fortunate enough during my time, there was a youth league, an under 12 league. That's when I first got introduced to structured football. You know, and I developed from there onwards up until I started with Kosafa under 17 in Pretoria. There was a tournament in Pretoria. So yeah, that's where we started gaining our international exposure. So with the schools tournament, it's earlier than the under 17 tournament. So it's more exposure at an earlier age. So hopefully that can fast process the development of players.
Yeah, and I guess that's the aim behind it as well, is to provide this kind of pathway that, as you say, starts a bit earlier. So, you know, the natural progression will be under 15, then under 17, under 20, etc.
Yes, definitely.
And just hosting this tournament, obviously we've got boys and we've got girls as well. I mean, women's football now is really gaining traction and really gaining a popular following. Obviously, it's great as well to see the girls out there playing.
Yeah, for me, it's interesting because I went to college in the US, and when I got there, I found real structure for women's football. I mean, I was on a football scholarship, a soccer scholarship, and there were girls who were on the same scholarship. It was interesting to see. I was like, yo, so these people are serious. So here we are now, and we've been doing well. I mean, if you look at Botswana as a case study, it's not so long ago we started women's football, and we've been to AFCON twice ahead of the men. So it makes you wonder, you know, that maybe we've missed out on developing girls' soccer.
And it's interesting you bring up the States there. Of course, their national team is arguably the most successful ever. And I think it all does come down to the fact that at schools level, and then, as you say, at college level, they got incredible structures in place that has really helped them to develop players over the years. And I guess while it would be difficult, perhaps from a financial point of view, for Kosafa nations to do the same, it is important to have some structures.
Definitely. With this structure, it sparks interest and desire. I mean, when we're deliberate about delivering football at this level, it then we start setting up the blocks for the structure. So it's good that COSAFA has actually done this. Like I say, I became a star, for lack of a better word, through COSAFA, you know, back then, for the national team. So imagine now if we give so much attention to the young ones, what kind of exposure we can give them.
And of course, you are involved in youth development yourself. You have an academy in Gaborone. If you just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I always ask myself, you know, when I was traveling, playing in the US, playing in Denmark, and eventually coming to South Africa, and I was like, oh, I've been to all these great facilities, these great platforms. We don't have them in Botswana at that same level. Why don't I start my own? And, you know, I'm building it brick by brick, looking for partners, investors, sponsors to come on board to build a center where kids can come in and play and learn how to play the right way. Hopefully inspire them to even get their education. I went abroad on a scholarship. So these things are possible. I think we just have to be intentional in terms of creating a platform for our kids.
And what sort of age groups are you looking at for the academy?
I started 5. That would be standard 1 in Botswana. 5 years is the youngest kid that I have. And it stays along with me until I assist them to get to the U.S. on a scholarship, or the parents pay, or I pay, depending how the model will look like in 10 years from now. But the idea is that they go through high school, getting high-level training, working on their grades to get good grades, so that they have a choice. You know, I think it's something we have to do in Africa, that we shouldn't force our kids to choose between school or sport. We have to be deliberate in terms of creating a platform where they can do both.
Yeah. And are you looking at boys and girls?
Yes. My eldest daughter was actually my first female player. She eventually quit at the age of 13, 14. That's about 6 years ago. Yeah, about 6 years ago. She quit and went to basketball. She's in America playing college basketball there, trying to rebuild her team again.
And if we just look at generally at Botswana and young footballers and players at school and whatnot, do you still see that love and hunger for the game that maybe you had and your peers had back in the day?
Oh, you put me in a tight spot. They'll kill me. But I have to be honest. I think the clout and the fame has superseded the passion for the game. Trust me, we have a lot of talented young players, and they want to arrive before they arrive. So they miss out on a lot of steps on how to manage their lives and how to commit and train to be better than yesterday. I mean, you see how it's like. The world has changed, man. They want things done overnight, but it's a process of development. It takes time, and you have to pay your dues. You will get there.
And I guess that's a great message for these kids who are at this schools championship in Stellenbosch as well. And I know there's a lot of off-pitch activities that are going to, you know, teach them life skills. And I think we see that the world over, kids are now, you know, they've got other options outside of sport. But a final question, just a message to the boys and girls that are playing here at Stellenbosch in the next few days, what would that be?
To enjoy the moment. You know, firstly, you have to enjoy. You have to love what you do and do your best. Whether you win or not, it's important to leave with great memories of the COSAFA school sports. That's the first thing. If you win, great. But enjoy the moment so that when you get back home, you get to share with your friends and share the experience, the moments, the pictures, you've taken pictures, so you can inspire others to join you in this journey. And it's a beautiful journey, difficult, but a very beautiful and rewarding journey.
Ruzi Matlaba has worked for the likes of Mamelodi Sundowns and Al Ahly in Africa, as well as several teams in the Middle East, in the role of football performance analyst. He offers an intriguing perspective on how teams are using data to prepare for matches. So first of all, you are part of the CASAFA seminar series, and you'll be presenting on the role and importance of performance analysis. Just for our listeners, can you just take us through exactly what is performance analysis in the football sense?
So I think the name is self-explanatory in the sense that we analyze performance, and that would be the performance either of your own team or of your opponent, the performance of an individual, the performance of a unit, which may be like midfielders, the performance of the team as a whole. And it's basically breaking down whatever circumstances you see in the game into smaller components where you can identify patterns and trends and then derive insights from that.
If we take an example, you might be facing Team A on the weekend. Is it your job then to provide the coaches with information around, to assist them with their tactical planning, but also their team selection?
Not necessarily team selection, but I think with the planning. So basically what you would be, I would then be doing is taking maybe the last 5-6 games of the opponent that we're going to play and breaking it down to identify patterns and trends in their game plan. And what you tend to see is maybe against a certain opposition, they play certain ways. Against a different type of opposition, they play different ways. And those findings would then maybe influence the way we train and prepare that week. And to a certain extent, maybe they might influence who the coach wants to play in the starting lineup that week.
I mean, it's incredibly interesting because, you know, I think many listeners probably think, you know, coaches set up training sessions, we know that, and you kind of plan for your opponents and whatnot, but the level of detail that you're talking about is really quite extraordinary. Is it mostly interpreting video content, or is there software that you use as well?
Yeah, so our starting point would always be video, because human beings, unfortunately, as much as we think we're perfect, we have a lot of flaws. So we have a lack of long-term memory, I guess. If you have 5 games you're trying to remember of an opponent, you wouldn't remember everything you saw. And so video is very important in that. It eliminates bias as well, because what happens in the video is objective. You can't lie about it. And also then it provides us with context. So we use video from the video we derive data. So we use that in conjunction with each other so that we can then go a little bit deeper to see from a statistical point of view if what we see in the video is corresponds with the data. And then from there we formulate game plans.
And are you finding, I mean, quite obviously it must be the case that clubs and I suppose specifically national teams and whatnot are starting to use this kind of technology a lot more, or is there a bit of a resistance as well?
Yeah, when I started in 2010, when I first got my internship into the space of analysis, some clubs were really open to embracing technology and using technology, and some were a little bit more resistant because it obviously comes at a cost. And so you'd find clubs would say, I could get maybe an extra player or extra 2 players for the amount that the software and hardware and personnel would cost. And, you know, when you bring something new to the space, people always ask, is it going to help me win? It's very difficult to explain to people that, you know, analysis and performance analysis is not a surefire thing that you're going to win because you use it. But we will help make informed decisions, which I think is the most important thing when you look at the amount of cost that goes into running and owning a football club. You know, you don't want to be making decisions based on feelings or based on emotions, but you want informed decisions based on statistics, based on video, coupled with the coaches and technical teams' experience. And so over the couple of years, we've seen more teams embracing it. And funny enough, some teams that are really doing well, you may think are using it. I'm talking national teams and even some clubs you may think are using analysis and data, and you find out they aren't for whatever reasons. But once they get into it, they really start to understand that it goes even beyond the actual pitch, because then it extends into things like contract renewals of players and assessing whether to keep or promote players from academy, things like that.
So do you... within a team, say you're working at a club, do you within that team create almost profiles around the players, around their, I guess, their, not just, you know, their performance, but their physical attributes, etc.?
Yeah, so the first thing you would do when you're at a club or when you're with a new coach or with a coach is to try and find out what their philosophy is. And that philosophy influences the type of players that the coach prefers. or wants for his system to work. So you may find that the fullbacks have to play in a certain way for this philosophy to work. Midfielders have to play in a certain way. Defenders have to be playing a certain way. So you might find a coach who prefers defenders who are really good in 1v1 marking, because he might say, we play against a team with one striker. I don't need two center backs defending one person. I want one center back to defend, and I want the other center back maybe to push into midfield and press or whatever the case is. So then you'd use data and video to find, in terms of scouting, you'd use that to find center backs who are really good at 1v1 defending. But then on top of that, he might say, yeah, defensively they should do that, but offensively I want defenders who can pass forward and who are comfortable on the ball. And so we again then use data, and that would filter down. Maybe you have 20 options of players you want to sign, and that would filter down maybe to end up being two or three options. And then obviously the clubs get involved in terms of negotiating things and whatever. But analysis is key to defining, firstly, what the coach's philosophy is, and then also to keeping track of it. So when you analyze your own team, you would then use analysis to say, coach, this is the philosophy you want. This is how you want our players to play. Here's the video to show whether we're achieving that or not. And if we're not, what could our solutions be to achieve that? And if we are, how do we maintain it and improve on it?
You look at teams and players on such a granular level. You know, you've worked in South African PSL, in Egypt, in Saudi Arabia, etc. Are there big differences in terms of how you are able to interpret data and present it? Or is football just kind of football the world over, and players are players, and it's just maybe slightly different styles?
Yeah, I think different countries and the different league that I've worked in, there has been some variations, because some of the leagues that I've worked in, most of the teams may, for example, play with a back five, and that influences how we would then set up against those kind of teams. So if you're doing that regularly or in more than half of your games, then your data and your video and your approach is definitely different in a league where most of the teams are playing with a back four. But what I've seen as well is that some of the countries we've gone to were not so keen or so clued up on it. And once we brought that in, they started seeing the value of it. And you had players coming and asking for profiles of the opponent they're going to face. You'd have a right back coming and saying, listen, I want to see the wingers of this opposition so that I'm prepared mentally. And then we'd go into creating, you know, some highlights, 5-8 minutes of those opponents. Also, we wouldn't really give them the data, but we would speak to them about data. So for example, I would be able to tell them, listen, the right winger is left-footed and he may cross about 10, 11 times a game, and 9 of those crosses are on his left foot, which means he's left-footed, he's playing on the right, he's going to have a tendency to try and cut inside. So how you defend would be to block him centrally and force him out wide to his right foot where he's uncomfortable. So we'd use the... And once players would see that, they would start to buy into that.
And then just a little bit about you. I mean, you mentioned there that you had an internship in 2010, which is kind of how you got into this industry. But kind of before that, what's your journey in football been like?
So I was never really in football. I went to school in Potchefstroom, which is a very Afrikaans community. Rugby, cricket, hockey, those were like the main sports in that area. And when I went to university, I went to Tuks, University of Pretoria. I was studying geology, and during my studies of geology, I was like, this is really not for me. I've always loved sports. And so I studied sports science. And during that process, I was always interested in football and loved watching football. But once I studied sports science, I wanted to be in football as a career. And I was fortunate enough that there was a company that came to South Africa called Amisco, who were relatively new and opened up an analysis office in South Africa, and they were looking for people. And I got referred by Wesley Sergel, who's the assistant coach at Stellenbosch. We were studying together, and he told me about this company. I applied, got an internship, and within, it was supposed to be a 3-month internship, at the end of the first month they hired me full time. And at that point we were servicing a couple of clubs in the PSL. So I would be doing analysis for Free State Stars 1 week, the next week I'd be doing analysis for Golden Arrows, the next week I'd be doing for AmaZulu. So I also got to interact with a lot of coaches and see how they view analysis and how they view football.
And if we just look a little bit to the future, I mean, technology is kind of put more and more into the game and is always going to be here. Do you see, or are there any sort of other technical advances that you see coming up? And how might the sort of the analysis that you do evolve over time, over the next 5, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, so I think in a generic sense, in terms of football matches being broken down into clips and situations, I think in a few years we'll be seeing AI probably doing that. But the one key thing is context is always key, and I think the human eye will always have an advantage there because, you know, saying you want to see clips on a forward pass, a computer or software can cut that for you. But as to why that pass was 8 meters long or 10 meters long or inaccurate, or why that pass was to the left foot instead of the right foot of the receiving player, those are certain things that I think the human eye would see. But definitely AI, especially in terms of data analysis, in terms of scouting players, is going to be very key because it's going to cut down the work process of looking at 100 right backs, you know, and filter that down as quickly as possible, maybe to a group of 10, which then you would have to physically watch and analyze and sift through as a human being in terms of what the coach is looking for. And technology can never replace experience. I think it goes hand in hand with experience. So the more experience that is put into the work process coupled with AI, I think the better decisions that will be made.
And then just lastly, I mean, you know, there has been, if I look at the Premier League, for example, I've been reading a few, the Premier League in England, I've been reading a few articles recently about people saying it's maybe become a bit too robotic because the players are so well informed now and tactically so aware. But I guess there's no, you know, then you throw it back and it's really kind of up to the players perhaps to adapt, or coaching to adapt and to find new ways to break down teams who are so well informed about their opponents.
Yeah, and I think advances in technology, advances in coaching, advances in players' fitness and strength and conditioning will always lead to, you know, the margins becoming finer and finer between, you know, winning and losing, or drawing, or having a good performance or having a bad performance. But I think that these advances actually improve the game in the sense that players of amazing individual ability will then start to be produced because data and video analysis and proper coaching may help the team be able to organize. But now I may be saying I need to find wingers or midfielders who are really so capable that they can find those gaps or can win the 1v1 challenges or win the 1v1 battles. And I think that encourages player creativity. I think if you look at our national team and you look at the wingers we have with like Gota and Apollos, and before this Percy Tau, and, you know, Geleza, who's just been called up to the national team now, their players were really good and creative in 1v1 situations. And that has nothing to do with data or performance analysis. That's the player's own individual ability. And I think the more that's encouraged as well within the context of the game plan, the better for football.
That's it for another episode of The Kasafa Show. We look forward to your company again next time. Don't forget, you can listen to more of our episodes on The Kasafa's YouTube channel, iTunes and Spotify, and also get the latest news via our website at www.kasafa.com.